Welcome back to another episode of the Property Management Show, where we deep dive into the world of property management, marketing, and entrepreneurship. Your hosts are Marmeet Tuckman and Brittany Jones from 4&Half Marketing Agency. Since 2012, we have been helping residential property managers get more owner leads and more business through the power of marketing. Whether you need help with your website, SEO, online reputation, video or written blog content, social media, paid ads, you name it, we can help you. Visit our website, 4andhalf.com, to learn more. That's F-O-U-R-A-N-D-H-A-L-F.com. Today's guest is Amy Harrison, who is an accomplished sales and marketing copywriter. She has a blog called Write With Influence, and she is joining us today from across the pond. Welcome to the show, Amy. Yeah, so Amy, I think the very first time Brittany and I saw you on stage, heard you speak, was at a marketing conference, Unbounce in 2016. Mm-hmm. And I remember that very well because, the notes that I have from there, I still use to this day. And personally, I consider that to, have helped me become a much better marketer. So I'm really excited for our discussion today.
That's awesome. Yeah. I couldn't have scripted that better myself. that's going way, way back. That's fantastic. I'm really pleased.
I think we went and got a Scotch egg after watching you.
Yes. I didn't know what
the first one I'd ever had.
It was good,
but you inspired us.
Funnily enough, and I'm sure that you'll explain the story later, but I was walking along with my husband the other day and something came up and he still said, he was just started laughing and he was like, God, he said, I remember when you had that Scotch egg in your handbag that you tried to offer. And he was just, I think he looked at me wistfully, feeling like he'd made the right decision, but who knows?
I love it.
He definitely did make the right decision. Mm-hmm. To start us off and give our audience a bit more context, if they haven't heard you speak at PM Grow or other conferences, can you briefly share your background?
Yeah, sure. So I originally studied to be a screenwriter for film and TV. So I went off and studied that for 3 years. I convinced my parents that, I know it sounds like it's a very specific degree, but this is what I want to do. This is the only thing I want to do. And then after 3 years, I thought, well, I'd never want to do that again. And so I sort of got burnt out with writing. I did love the course. It was a lot of writing after, just on a conveyor belt of writing scripts. And two, I was 21 and realized I knew nothing. So I then went to Toronto and worked there for a year and kind of escaped my parents' wrath of me not having a job that went with my degree. But then I sort of found my way back in that I was came back to the UK, was working for a private investment firm, and they were buying and selling online businesses. And this was back sort of mid-2000s. And so we were basically flipping businesses, and that's when I started to get into content writing and copywriting, because you're trying to improve all the marketing assets, all the collateral that goes with the business to make it attractive to an investor. And then I decided to go out on my own and just started writing. I was writing for 4 pence a word. I think that's what I started out as. And then I really discovered sales copywriting and I started off writing sort of for SEO and informational, just web content. When I discovered really, the psychology of sales and marketing, something clicked and I just loved that. And I started to then see the dovetail between what I'd studied, telling engaging stories, making people want to read more, building credibility into, everything that I could use those skills and tell really good stories on behalf of businesses. So it was a long way around, but that degree, mom and dad, it was worth it in the end.
And that also gives you a unique point of view when you're approaching copy, right?
Yeah, 100%. You're always, I really think it taught me to, you're writing for the reader. If people don't want to turn the page of a script, you've lost them. If they don't want to read the subheading, if they don't want to read past the headline, again, you've lost them. And there is a balance because you obviously have a vested interest in, you have something to sell. But if you don't engage that reader, then you could have the perfect products in the world. They'll never know about it. Mm-hmm. A lot of overlap between screenwriting. And it's still, script writing is something that I still do today in my spare time. And I've won some awards and prizes for it. So it's good fun.
And so you've been in the field of like copy and like sales and marketing conversion driven copy for a while. How have you seen things evolve over the years?
Yeah. So, I mean, as I say, when I first started, it was really, it was more about just businesses needed to get their information online. And it was very SEO driven. But SEO, not in a great way. SEO, mm-hmm. as in cram this page full of these keywords without sounding like a maniac. But it was that case of, it was that first case of, we need to reach people. They need information about us. And it was a very transactional exchange of, here's my business. Here's what I do. And then people cottoned on that there were better ways to take that as a conversation that could lead to sales. If you provided valuable content to reach your audience online, to grow, to nurture them, blogging became very big for businesses. And I still think publishing free content like this podcast, anything that's valuable, that keeps you top of mind and showcases your expertise, where people don't actually have to buy something from you to get value from that content, is still incredibly valued. There's still huge opportunities for a lot of businesses to realize that all content that you produce doesn't have to feel like marketing or sales in order to market and sell your business. In terms of the evolution, I think a lot of people are now they're more keenly aware of what marketing can do and what copywriting can do. But what's interesting is that so many businesses still really struggle with it. Like I don't tend to work with smaller companies anymore, but when I started to work from, small businesses and startups to larger companies, we're talking Fortune 500, Fortune 100 companies. What always amazed me is that you look behind the scenes of these million-dollar budgets for their marketing, they still have the same struggles as, say, a freelance photographer. And the struggles that they would come to me with was, how do I stand out? How do I sell without being salesy? What really are my benefits? What do customers really care about? And how do I tell a story around that? And so it's interesting that, yes, there's been an evolution in terms of education and what's possible. People are a lot more savvy. People still struggle with a lot of the challenges that copywriting can solve.
It's so interesting that you talk about the evolution and how like consumers are now more used to seeing kind of free content, yet businesses are still struggling to provide free content that potential customers actually value. And I remember one of kind of like the big takeaways I had from your 2016 talk was like umbrella terms, right? And how a lot of businesses, when they're trying to distill what makes them different, they have this brainstorm and they end up with like really generic words because they try to like have an umbrella term to talk about everything they do. And then every business starts to sound the same. And it's so funny because that was 2016, but I still see businesses do that today. And definitely. I bet like you see that with Fortune 100, Fortune 500 companies too.
I do. I see it a lot, and it's so funny. And there's a lot of different psychological factors that at play here. There is that fact that, we want to tell everything about our product or service, what makes us unique. And usually what makes us unique is a combination of lots of different elements. But as marketers, we want to just sum that up in something succinct that says it all. And you can't do that. That's where you get terms like, well, we're high quality, we're premium, we're leading, we're industry leading.
Yes.
And it feels really good to say these out loud, but all you need to do is just take a look either side at your competitors and see that they're saying exactly the same thing. And what's frustrating is that, it can be frustrating. I'm lucky. I work with you know, I love my clients. I work with very, very smart businesses that have great products, but you can sometimes land on a message where you say, this sounds a bit different. This sounds a little bit bolder. Mm-hmm. And then that fear factor kicks in of, but it sounds different. You know, no one else is saying it. What if we're taking, you know, what if we're zigging when everyone's zagging and we're going to look foolish? And mm-hmm. so you do have to learn to expand your comfort zones of being a little bit different if you really do want to stand out. And I think that's where a lot of businesses struggle, is that they want the results of standing out. They're not always comfortable with what it means to stand out.
And another thing you mentioned is story. And, you know, Brittany and I are also like big believers that story is very powerful, but story is even harder to kind of develop and polish than the list of benefits, you know? And so my question is, with attention spans nowadays getting shorter and shorter and shorter, like, you know, even like TikToks are like, you know, within the first 3 seconds, you have to like get their attention or otherwise you lose them. How can businesses get prospective customers to pay attention to stories? Because stories take a lot longer to set up, to get to the climax, right? And, you know, how does it work when there's an inverse kind of relationship between attention spans and the need, even more need, to use stories to stand out?
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. Attention spans are, you know, they are shorter. You know, fairy tales used to start with once upon a time. You wouldn't even get that far. You've lost them. They've gone. They've gone somewhere else. You know, so the, and I think what's key is that, you know, I remember when I was growing up, it was the MTV generation, you know, and attention spans were shorter, and now it's TikTok, you know, and attention spans are even shorter. And I think it's not so much about the attention spans being shorter. It's that you have to earn the right to get their attention straight away. So you almost want to flip a story around. You can still tell great stories, but you have to earn their attention in order to get to the next bit, the next bit, the next bit. And it's very easy to say that and then say, well, so how do I do that? And with copywriting, with marketing, you've got to get their attention. And one way to do that, there's lots of different techniques, but one way is to really think about how does that first piece of content, whether it's a headline or your first few seconds of a video, how does it speak directly to the person that you want to connect with? It's a little bit like if you're at a party, you're in a crowded room and there's lots of conversations going on around you. You're not necessarily tuned into to any of them. But if you suddenly hear your name, or you hear a juicy piece of gossip, or someone talking about a subject that interests you, your attention will go very quickly, you know, and zone in on that. Now, you can't call your customers by their name. You can't always know, you know, you don't necessarily want to tell salacious gossip to get their attention. That's clickbait. But you can work harder to make your content hyper relevant. And one way to think about that is to go try and write the conversation that your customer is having in their mind right now. What are they thinking about? And again, in copywriting, unfortunately, what the beauty and the challenge of copywriting is there's so many different ways to do this. But a few examples are thinking about where are they in their awareness of needing you? So are they just thinking about maybe starting with a rental and they need a property manager? You know, your headline might just speak to that level of awareness of should you sell or rent your second home. Now, it's not going to, you know, blow anyone's wig off, but for the right person at that stage of awareness, that's the message that they need to hear if it's on their mind. You can also do it with frustrations that they may have. Let's say it's you're trying to find people that are frustrated with their current managers and you think you have an opportunity to do something different. You know, and it could be testing out headlines like, you know, we answer the phone within three rings, or does your heart sink when your property manager calls you? So it's thinking about the different segments of your audience, whether it's people who are new to you, people who are frustrated, and it's thinking about when they think about the problem that you can solve, what's already in their mind. And that's where you can get their attention, and then you can pull them, and then you can pull them along for the story. You can tell then your story about how you are better, who you've helped, but you've earned that attention by showing that what you have is a relevant story to them, like that calling their name out in a crowd.
I really like that analogy about calling their name out in the crowd or at a party. There are so many conversations going on, but you know, it is human nature. You are able to kind of sift through the different conversations and kind of pick out, oh, which groups are actually talking about things I'm interested about. And I feel like we often don't realize that we have that talent and that customers have that innate talent as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's basically a story is only boring when it's irrelevant. So if you can think about what is most relevant, most pressing, most of interest to my prospect, another thing that you can do as well, which is used, I've written a lot about it in copywriting, and I talk about it as what are the symptoms of the problem, because you can also think about what are maybe some warning lights that they can see. A little bit like the warning light on your dashboard that you shouldn't ignore, but probably do until it goes from amber to red. You're pulling in somewhere. You know, what problem can they notice that might be a signal for, or rather what signal may they notice that suggests there's a problem that they may not be aware of that is actually bigger than they think or even know. So I don't know, for example, is poor maintenance making you liable as a landlord, or, you know, just something that as you have the expertise to know, these are red flags that property owners shouldn't ignore. Let's draw attention to them. So another way of sort of getting their attention is they may not know what the problem is, but they may have seen signs and symptoms. And that's a great way of again, connecting with the right people that you can help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. And I know our audience might be wondering if we'll get to AI because, you know, as soon as, you know, ChatGPT came around and all the other AI tools came out, there's been talk about how, oh, AI is going to replace copywriters and marketers, right? And so out of curiosity, Amy, have you, you know, been using AI and kind of like, how do you see AI in this space, you know, what's your opinion?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think AI is a fantastic tool. I think it's really interesting. And it's funny that when I first, you know, I was seeing all the headlines of copywriters losing jobs. And when I dug a little bit deeper, it's AI can only work with what it's been trained on. So, you know, it's not generating anything new, and it is a fantastic tool, and it can definitely save time. If you need a generic article about, you know, 10 things to do in San Francisco at the weekend, it will spew it out. And what may have taken a content writer, you know, half an hour to write, a tool can do in 2 minutes. Those are the jobs that's the type of writing that is going to get replaced. And what it's done for a lot of companies is help them go from zero content to some content. But that content is pretty generic. It sort of, you can feel it. You can kind of, it's got that uncanny valley sort of feeling of like, it's not quite right. Mm-hmm. And
right.
What it lacks, I think, is personal nuance. So it's not going to help you write exceptional copy. It can't look at content and say, I think this theme needs to be more bold. This section needs to be tighter. It can't think about a customer. Like if you say you get an email from a customer and you can, in a split second, you can recognize, are they frustrated? Are they excited? Mm-hmm. And in your response, you can adapt to that tone and you have the context of who the customer is. Do they want to get straight to the point? Are they the type of customer that wants to exchange pleasantries? We do that in a second, and it's all that nuance, all that understanding of psychology and how to apply it and how to put it in writing that ChatGPT cannot do. And I know I'm talking about an email there, but your copy, whether it's an advert, your website, mm-hmm. a newsletter, it is a conversation. You know your customers, your brand, your style, your tone of voice, and you want your content to sound like a human. But it's a fantastic tool for getting started and for not having to just look at a blank page. I've definitely used it.
Yeah, it's so interesting because, like, you know, Brittany and I have been using it too, playing around with it. And one of the counter arguments that we hear when people talk about whether AI content is as good as human content is that, well, it comes up with original content. It's not, it passes plagiarism checkers, right? And my rebuttal to that is, well, when you hear the word original, how do you interpret it, right? Because some people would say original means not plagiarized. And then others would hear the word original and immediately think, oh, it means novel, never heard of before, out of the box, right? And I feel like people are misunderstanding that, oh, if it's not plagiarized, it's good content. It's like, no, just because it's not plagiarized doesn't make it good content.
Yeah. Absolutely. And it's the same thing coming back to the umbrella terms. You know, okay, this is a tool that lets you write content that isn't plagiarized. You can do it in minutes. Take a look left and right at all your competitors. If they are using the same tool, putting in very similar prompts to you, you're not standing out. You're suddenly, so what it's done is it has raised the bar for people who have had no content or awful, awful content, but it's raised everyone's bar. So it's not, it's not helping you stand out from the crowd and say something different and have that boldness and that edge. It is just, if you rely on it, you know, a high tide raises all ships. Like, everyone is coming up a little bit,
yeah.
But the ones that know how to use it as a research tool or a tool to organize notes, but is still using actual human beings that are bright and savvy and sharp, those are the ones where it's going to be, this is a breath of fresh air. This is different content.
Yeah, I remember when ChatGPT first came out, I was like messaging Brittany, like, our jobs are in danger. Like, it's so amazing. Like, I asked it. I was like, everything's over. I asked it to write a blog. Yeah, I was like, I asked it to write a blog. And I wrote a blog. Oh, my gosh. And she's like, calm down. Let me read the blog. And she's like, that's not good. I'm like, yeah, but it's just getting better. And, you know, and then I was like, oh, this is the end. And Brittany was kind of more the, you know, critical thinker and was like, well, let's play around with it. And then it's been out for like over a year. And, you know, like, it's initially, I think it was just amazing because we'd never seen anything like that before. But then now, whenever I surf online and even on social media, for some reason, my mind can pick up stuff that's been written by AI. I don't know why.
Because you're more familiar with it too, because we've played around with it so much.
Yeah. And so it's like, in the beginning, I was just like, oh, that sounds like a pretty decent blog that a human would do. Like, oh no. But it was because my brain had never seen a machine do something like that. But then after seeing kind of how AI writes, for some reason, my brain has had this framework of like, oh, this looks like how an AI would structure this. Definitely AI. And I kind of like looked into the psychology of it. And there's something about how humans write, like they call it like a jumpiness, that is very different from how AI writes, is just more kind of like formulaic, because that's what they are. They're word calculators. I heard someone say it's a word calculator, a large language model. But it's so hard to put my finger on like how exactly to explain it. But my brain just developed this filter now.
I agree. They are. And I think, you know, when it first started, I think a lot of them, if you were just writing information for blogs, you know, and nothing wrong with that, but that's the job that was most at risk. If you're trying to think of a headline that is specific to your customers, that is based on a need that you know from the research that you've done, you're going to struggle to get an AI that can beat that. And you're right in that just even the rhythm of it is very, It's very paced. It sounds like a, you know, sort of like, I'm trying to think like over here. It reminds me of someone who's like 15 trying to write a really formal, you know, impressive.
Yes.
You know, and it's just, and it is, it's very formulaic. It doesn't have that nuance. It doesn't have that rhythm, that pace that, you know, I've played around with it so many times. You know, write me an email that, is promoting a product or a course or whatever. And then just keep saying like less salesy, less, you know, like, and you
try less flowery words. Yeah.
I'll do like less formal, and then it'll throw in some weird, like, oh, hey, we're hip, we're cool. And
exactly.
No, we're not 15-year-old.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, you know, when you try and make it conversational, it just sounds like, you know, like your drunk uncle who's trying to fit in. Like, I think it's time for you to go home. Like, you.
So true.
Had a bit too much.
Yeah. I was just going to say, going back to what you were saying about the emails, I definitely try to, sometimes I'll be writing an email to a client trying to explain something in simpler terms, where I'm just like, this is too technical. I need to simplify it. Let me try to plug it into ChatGPT to see if it can simplify it for me. Oftentimes, I spend more time trying to get ChatGPT to simplify it for me than I would have had I just sat down for an extra 5-10 minutes to simplify the terms myself. And then it's like, you also have an email you could use to explain it to somebody else too, that is in a way that sounds human. So that made a lot of sense to me.
Yeah. And it's interesting that you say that, because I think it's a great tool, and it's a great time-saving tool. You know, you can feed your notes into it. And one thing that I may do is, if I've been workshopping with a client and we're building some messaging where I'm just taking copious notes throughout the day, I will feed that in and say, you know, just group them into the main themes. Mm-hmm. You know, if you need it, it's really good for just tidying notes. You know, if you're a writer, mm-hmm. you tend to take lots of them. It's also very useful for me if I want to take a lot of information and I want to summarize it for someone who just needs that summary. So I've done it where we've done a lot of customer surveys, and then I have summarized that and given that to the executive level, because that's the amount they need to know. But if I'm writing copy based on those surveys, I still need to go and read those surveys. Mm. I still need to do the firsthand research. I need to get on a phone with a customer, because I need to hear the language that they use. I need to hear, you know, something that ChatGPT might miss out. I will think, that's gold. That's something that we can use. There's an angle there. This is all the stuff that gets sort of smoothed off and rounded out by the tool. Yeah. But what it's great for is, and it was funny you saying there that it took you probably longer to rewrite what it was doing than to actually, if you'd done it yourself, is it, I've experimented with it for emails and sales pages, and the output's pretty terrible. But sometimes for people, if you're just beginning copywriting, it can be easier to rewrite something that's already there than stare mm-hmm. at a blank page. So yeah. If you wanted to get yourself started and say, okay, if I'm writing to a prospect who's interested in property management, what 5 things should I mention? Or, you know, give me a headline, subheading and 200 words of copy, and then just go in and rewrite it. So I've seen that help a lot of people that otherwise wouldn't publish anything. Yeah. By the time that they're finished, there's no ChatGPT content. There's no AI content in there, because they've written it themselves, but it's a starting point. It's a bit of a springboard. So it can definitely be useful.
Yeah.
That's interesting. You share that story, because I have the same experience. Sometimes I'm like an industry speaker now, and I talk about kind of like property management marketing. And I always try to use the principles that I learned from your talks, Amy, which is like story, right? And people often ask me, because in the age of AI, they're like, did you use AI to write your talk? And it's really, really hard to answer that question, because yes, I do use AI to write my talk, but I go through phases. Like, I'm the same way. It's hard for me to stare at a blank page. So it's easier for me to have something to kind of go against, like against or with. So what I typically do is I would have like an unbaked idea of kind of what I want to say. And I would tell the AI to just, hey, here's my idea. Start writing it. And then I'm like, no, no, no. Type. No, that's not where I'm taking it. And then it's like, so I did use AI, but like the words you're hearing from me are my words. So it's like, it's hard for me to explain, well, how much AI did I use for my, to write this talk, right? Because they kind of feel like, oh, did you write 50% of the AI wrote 50? But I'm like, it's so hard to quantify because I'm kind of using it as a, like a sounding board. Yeah.
Sounding board.
Yeah, I love that. I think I love the way that you put that, you know, it gives you something to go against. And this is what I found whenever I was early on and experimenting with it, I was thinking, wow, this is so bad. You know, it's like I would never put this out, but okay, so what would I do with this headline? What would I do with this subheading? And as I say, you don't get a visceral reaction to a blank page. But
yes,
it's a visceral reaction to something that an AI tool has spewed out, and that spurs you on to even just start tinkering with it, deleting, changing. You know, that's great. That's productive. You still need your brain to engage with something and to do something. And so I think, it's got a lot of possibilities as a springboard and as a sounding board, and even just as a time saving device. Like, okay, you know, give me 10 benefits of, property management. And then you go through and you think, well, some of those might be right. I wouldn't describe in those ways. Some of those aren't applicable, but it's, you know, for you to sit down and write all 10 from nothing may just take you a little bit longer. So, you know, it's definitely got its advantages for saving time.
Yeah. And so, I have another question. Because we were talking about kind of persuasive copy, and I know that like we've been talking about how AI copy kind of sucks and it's not really going to give you like high quality content out of the gate. How would you define quality content versus persuasive content? Are they one and the same?
You can have quality content that doesn't have the purpose to persuade. So you can have quality content that is just entertaining, that is just, that is just informational. And this is what I loved when I made that shift, which was key in my career, from just writing information to writing persuasive content, is you are driven by a goal of, I want someone by the end, whatever they've read from me, I want them to feel, think, do something. And so that's your persuasive element, is that there's an output that you want to happen. Whereas quality content, as I say, it could just be answering questions. But the way I think of it is basically every piece of content that you put out, if it's quality, can also help to persuade. If you answer a customer's questions, even if you're not asking for a sale, that might just give them the confidence in you. That then leads them to picking up the phone because you sound like you know what you're talking about and you can be trusted. Yeah, does that answer that question about the
definitely
quality and persuasive?
Yeah, and I really like the point that you made about the persuasion doesn't have to be buy from me now. The persuasion is to just get them to feel, think, or do something. And you're absolutely right. Not every single piece of content has to convince someone to buy from you, but it could be a different purpose. Like, do you want to persuade them that you can be trusted as a property manager in your area? Do you want to persuade them that you'll do a better job, or that you want to persuade them that they'll feel more at ease with you versus maybe their current property manager? And those are all, you know, goals that are useful to a business. It doesn't always have to be signed on the dotted line.
Absolutely. And if you're a business, you're interested in copywriting, you're interested in writing content that sells your what it is that you do. If you want to make sure that you stay on track and you increase your chances of making sure that the content is persuasive and engaging and high quality, for want of a better word, you need to make sure that you're always being driven by your customers' needs and interests. So, and I think this is something that businesses really struggle with. We don't want to be salesy, but we can fall into that trap of we're writing about our business and we forget that we're actually there to serve mm-hmm. customers. So it's like, you know, think about a party that you've been to and, you know, chances are that the person that you bumped into who talked nonstop about themselves for an hour isn't someone that you want to see again. But then you meet someone else who they asked you a few questions, they had enthusiasm for your answers and maybe give you, you know, some helpful tips or a restaurant recommendation or something valuable. You'll warm to that person. And I see the same effect can be absolutely included in marketing and in content. So when you're thinking about whatever it is that you're writing, whether it's an email, whether it's your frequently asked questions, whether it's your homepage, ask yourself, what does my customer need to know at this particular moment in time in order for them to take the next best, most likely step that could help them be a customer or not be a customer? Because a lot of your content as well is to filter out people that aren't suitable. So a call to action is obviously important. You know, everything is driven to get people to ultimately you want them to pick up a phone, sign a contract, send an email. But start out by asking yourself, okay, my customers in front of my website, what do they need? What do they need at this moment in time? What are they looking for? If it's an advert, then how can you let them know that you can solve a problem that they have? How can you let them know that you're trusted, that you're credible? You know, if you do have someone that's about to sign a contract and you think, well, what do they need? They need transparency and they need confidence. So what information can you give them that will tell them this is going to be safe, this is going to be beneficial, and this is even going to be something exciting, something that will bring them a lot of happiness when they, you know, when they start working with you. Mm-hmm. And again, this is something that AI can't do because this all comes from the research. This comes from talking to your customers. Talk to people who didn't become your customers if you can, who chose another company, because companies that actively seek the feedback, who are brave enough to seek the feedback, not only of customers, but those that got away, those are the ones that are going to have better growth. Those are the ones that are going to put together marketing that sounds different and that speaks to the conversation that the customer's having because they're listening to them.
I really love that. I think I saw a video of a talk you did where you talked about your process and how you literally read the freeform text from like customer surveys and reviews, and you literally lift words from there, which I can do. Like maybe you can feed it a spreadsheet of reviews. But what's interesting, I'm not sure if you got this to Brittany, but even when you feed it stuff, it misses golden moments. Yeah. Like even just transcripts of the podcast, like I started experimenting with using ChatGPT to like repurpose these long form podcasts into like little snippets. And then I would ask it for like even just like a highlights or summary. And I would notice it would miss kind of like big insights that I thought were pretty good that I only remember because I was on the podcast. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like if I outsource this to a team member who didn't even bother watching the podcast and just trusted that ChatGPT would read the transcript, it would never make it there. And so it's interesting how it glosses over the things that stand out to the humans.
Absolutely. And I've had it, like, I know I've driven clients crazy in the past when I wanted to survey customers and they want to just use multiple choice. And I'm saying, I want to do open form fields. Like I want people to write in and they know that, but we might get 500, 600, 1,000 replies. And it's like, that's fine. I may not read every single one, but I need to know what they're putting. If it's multiple choice, I can tell you the most popular choice out of 5. I can tell you the least popular choice. I can't give you any context. I can't tell you what they're struggling with. I can't tell you how they feel about the choice that they've made. And I've had other clients where they've asked me to produce marketing content from summarized research of whether it's a podcast or customer research. Mm-hmm. And I just can't do it. I mean, I could do it, but you're going to miss stuff. You will absolutely, mm-hmm. you know, it's
you're getting the summarized version.
you're getting that softer edges of tightened, nice, neat package that anyone else can go and get. And it's like, I want to look under rocks and I want to, you know, mm-hmm. gold.
Not because I'm a maniac, but because yeah. that's how you stand out.
yeah. And also, and it's, you know, it's interesting because the companies that get that and the companies that invest in having people go and do that, they have the best copy, they have the best marketing, you know, and it's definitely worth investing in that because it's not just someone going through a spreadsheet. It's someone, you know, searching for the difference. Something that can make a huge difference in your marketing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I just came up with like a question because we were talking about kind of like CTA and kind of talking to that customer to, you know, make them feel, think, do something. And so, you know, property management is unique in a sense that they kind of have multiple types of customers they're trying to attract with their websites, right? For example, they need to attract renters and then also more property owners. And sometimes if they're doing sales, also, you know, like people looking to sell their home. And so what advice can you give to property management companies who have a single website, but, you know, they need it to cater to these different constituents?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And it's unique to property management firms in the sort of the personas, but it's not necessarily, you know, it's also common with other businesses that serve different segments. So there's a couple of things to, you know, think about from a very simple point of view is I would segment your website so that as soon as someone comes on that homepage, they know which adventure to choose. And I would have different content catering to those different needs. One way that you can tell, one way that you can test, you know, do I need completely different content and copy is whether the problem or the goal is different for different segments. So are there pain points different? Are the way that they describe their problem different? Because then that's very much the story that you want to tell. If you're trying to attract, and this, you know, if for someone who is just thinking about renting out their second home to someone who wants to grow their portfolio and wants help doing that, completely, they're after different things. They have different problems. They need a different conversation. And, you know, the way in terms of writing the content is to think, if I had this person in front of me, how would I speak? Would I speak differently? Would my tone be different? Would I be a little bit more reassuring with someone who is, you know, a first time, you know, someone who's looking to rent out the property first time? Am I going to be more ambitious to the point and about the figures to someone that's growing their portfolio, has been through this? This isn't their first property rodeo, but they need your expertise. And then structurally, I would just make that super simple for people to navigate the minute that they land on your website so that they can see you have that range, but there is a specific path for them where they will get, again, it's that what story is relevant to me, and you want to mm-hmm. make sure you're always serving that relevant content. And that can take a lot of extra work. I have clients where they want to, you know, they run their content and they want to, you know, but we have a page that's kind of sort of deals with this. Can we not just have it for both audience segments? And sometimes you can, but I think, you know, the harder you work to serve your customers with what they need, the better results you'll get.
Mm-hmm. I love that. It's kind of like showing them at the forefront, like, look how hard I work to identify, distill your needs and the solution. Can you imagine if you actually work with me, you know, versus I think industries that serve multiple audiences are the ones more likely to use umbrella terms because they think they can get away with just, oh, let's just have one story for all the different customers, and then you end up with integrity, accountability.
Or it's, you know, it's we are the one-stop shop for all your property management needs. And it's like, yes. This is something that is valuable to me. I would like you to take the time to sort of address what is important to me specifically. And I don't care about these other people. So I don't really want to hear necessarily what you're doing with them. Now sometimes as I say, if it's your homepage, you want to address the range of things that you can do. There's nothing wrong with saying whether you're a first time, landlord, or you want to grow your portfolio, we can help. We have the experience. That then just shows a range. But from that point on, depending on which path they choose, they should be getting content that's specific to them.
Definitely.
I love that. Amazing advice, Amy. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Brittany, do you have anything?
No, I have a lot of things to think about from this conversation and ideas that I have, but no, nothing else. That was great.
Thank you so much, Amy, for all the stories and insights. It was a really fun conversation. I appreciate it. I hope the audience also appreciated it.
Yeah, no, this has been a lot of fun for me, and I think you're doing a great thing with the podcast. So I think it's fantastic, and I think that the service that you're doing for putting content like this out to help people is great.
Thank you, Amy. Yeah, when I was thinking about interviewing someone about AI and copywriting, you were the first person on my list. So I'm very grateful that you made time for this.
No, you're very welcome. I've thoroughly enjoyed it.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Amy. If any of our audience members maybe have questions, want to reach out to you, where can they find you? Or, maybe you still have a blog. I think you used to have a blog about copywriting.
I do. And I haven't written anything new for a couple of years, because I've just been at capacity with client work and strategy work. And I do, I still take on clients, but it tends to come through recommendation routes. But I'm always happy to answer questions. You can find, I'm sure there's links in the show notes, but the main website is writewithinfluence.com. But I do still have a website at harrisonamy.com. I'm on Twitter. You can find me. I'm very approachable. I'm always happy to answer questions.
And that's all we have for this episode of the Property Management Show, brought to you by 4&Half Marketing Agency. Since 2012, 4&Half has been helping property managers get more owner leads and more business through the power of marketing. Whether it's with their website, SEO, online reputation, video and blog content, social media, paid advertising like, Google Ads, you name it, we can help you. Visit our website, fourandhalf.com, to learn more. That's fourandhalf.com. As usual, we are open to, suggestions for future episodes and your feedback. So you can do that by emailing marketing@fourandhalf.com. And if you are loving our show, please go ahead, show us some love by leaving a rating or review on your favorite podcast app. Thank you so much for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed this episode, and we will see you next time. Bye.